Just have fun. You are building the future of the internet, the future of everything, the future of almost all the technologies that are here. So just have fun. Just do what you want to do. And let's build this future together.
Hello and welcome to Dev3. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to Harsh. Harsh is the creator of the Push protocol, which was previously known as EPNS. EPNS rebranded about 3 hours ago, and so this podcast could not be more perfectly timed. So Harsh here is a full-stack dev and a company leader. He has thoughts across the board from product leadership over to management over to software engineering, and he describes the tech stack of Push. So if you want to stick around to the end, that is when you'll get the best information here. Without further ado, here's Harsh. Hello and welcome to Dev3, the podcast where I interview developers in Web3. Today I have with you Harsh. He's a co-founder and project lead at the Ethereum Push Notification Service, who recently announced wallet-to-wallet communication. We're going to get into that announcement here a bit later, but I wanted to welcome you on. How are you today, Harsh?
Hey, Dawson. I'm feeling great. It's so good to see you, and it's so good to be here.
Absolutely. The pleasure's all mine. It's excellent every time I get to see you or Richa, two co-founders of EPNS. Y'all were very kind to me at ETH Denver, giving me coffee after coffee. So I really enjoyed our conversation there and hope that today's will be just as exciting, if not more exciting. And to really get it started, I would love to understand for you, as a full stack developer who became a product and a business leader, how did you get started into crypto? What started you down the path that you're currently on?
I basically didn't know anything about crypto till 2014, 2015. That was when Bitcoin made headlines because it went to $1,000. And of course, I thought it might be a good investment, so I bought it. And at the same, in a couple of weeks, it fell back to $200. So yeah, that was my entry to crypto, and that was my intro to crypto. Of course, when it fell down, I was curious, like, what's happening, what's going on. So I started looking into Bitcoin, realized there are a lot of other coins as well. Started trading, followed the classic strategy, buying high and selling low, always worked for me. And yeah, in 2017, I realized that this cannot really go on. Or be sustainable. But I also realized that, you know, whenever I'm trading, most of the time I saw that coins, there were different coins, and when they were listed to other exchanges, their value went up based on the exchange they got listed at. So using that, I created a bot. Now I know it's called an arbitrage bot. I didn't know at that point of time. But yeah, that bot used to trade coins for me and then used to send me weekly reports. Around 2017, it started sending me a lot of ERC-20 coins, and that piqued my interest. And that was the first time I realized that you can program on blockchain because Ethereum. And yeah, that was how I got into crypto and never looked back.
I love this idea of always buy high, sell low.
Works all the time.
You live by it. I have a similar story. I think everyone does in the beginning. The goal is that that's not your long-term story with this. And of course, for builders like us, it's also something we're in this for way more than just the finances. And so we're in it for the technology. And for you, I'd love to understand, when you learned that you could program with Ethereum, what was that first experience like? What was maybe the first smart contract? Or what was the first thing you really did that was like, oh, this is different than Bitcoin?
Got it. So crypto zombies. That was the start. I think that is the start for most of the developers. I actually got lucky because I was an entrepreneur before. We used to do mobile apps and games. So I knew that, you know, if you're starting to program on something, you probably need some experience or some mentorship. I got lucky because the company I joined, the engineer over there that basically told me or taught me how to do things, is actually the lead engineer at Uniswap now. So I kind of learned from him. And also from Andy. Andy is now doing Andy did fractional NFTs. They are also a very popular project. So I actually learned from them, which is very, very cool. But yeah, crypto zombies was the way to go. Smart contracts, to me, I couldn't understand it at first, like why to save gas. But then I started comparing it with the 8085 microprocessor and how you have to save memory over there. And that is when I started applying those logics to smart contracts. It's an ever learning process. Like I still go out and try to see, you know, better ways to build. And I think if you are into smart contracts, then definitely you cannot learn enough. And you usually go to EIPs or Reddit crypto is also a very good bet to start.
Yeah, I think the crypto zombies was such a popular thing in when I got interested in 2019 on the smart contract side. It was the only way. Like Patrick Collins wasn't creating content yet. There wasn't all these great YouTubers out there. There's so many cool DAOs now too that are teaching folks. And I know that there's actually a lot of blockchain education that's coming out of India. I'm curious for you, are you connected or know any of those folks that are, I believe Web3 DAO might be based out of there.
So yeah, it's funny. Like when I did crypto zombies, it was like those meme wherein you are like, I know everything. That is the bell curve. Like when you start, I don't know everything. And then you learn something and the bell curve is like, okay, I know everything now. And then the more you learn, you are into that I don't know everything. So I followed that same bell curve. A lot of crypto education is available now. A lot of quality crypto education is available now. I mean, Austin Griffith is just awesome. The type of tools he builds. Learn Web3 DAO is cool as well. Disclaimer, I might invest in them. So, you know, that's a fair disclaimer. But they are also doing some amazing effort. Then there's this product, the product house, that are also doing Web3 knowledge that's coming out of India. More than India, I think globally, a lot of people are pushing crypto in an easier way when we started, probably in 2017, 2018. And that's why we probably do a little more mistakes than the people who are coming in right now, because, you know, they have these awesome developers and GigaBrains teaching them exactly how to do it right. So yeah, I mean, I'm super excited about crypto, and I'm super excited about new people coming in and joining Web3.
Yeah, Twitter especially has been exciting, I think, in this bear market to see the folks that are still around. This is coming in August 2022, which maybe we're already on the other side of the worst, but either way, the buy high, sell low joke is actually a pretty great way to know when to do community building as well. You know, in the bear market, we're building for the next bull. And so I know that you all have a ton that you're building and working on over the Ethereum Push Notification Service, which is EPNS. But I guess before we get into the specifics of how wallet-to-wallet communication might work, could you tell us the why? Why might we need this feature?
So we started back in HackMoney 2020. And the vision was like, we need communication in Web3. No one was actually building that at that point of time. So just to give you an example, like this meeting is because Google sent me an alert that you have a meeting coming up at Dawson. So that's why I was able to prepare my coffee. I was able to, you know, touch up my hair, get my headphones and come over here on time. And that started with a notification, and people don't realize, but everything starts with a notification in Web2 or in all our virtual world, like important emails, anything we do on Twitter, even deliveries that we do, like Amazon deliveries or any payments we do, Venmo, PayPal, or any banking thing we do, all of it basically comes to us via notifications. Even when we are talking to WhatsApp, we are talking to our friends on WhatsApp, we are not talking to them. We are just doing notifications, and then it transforms into chat. So that was when we realized that for the communication layer to actually work, we first need notifications because it solves a lot of issues, right? So for example, if you are into DeFi, your loans are getting liquidated, but it would be cool if you can know about it beforehand. It would be sad if you knew about it when the loan got liquidated, but would be very cool if you could get an alert that your loan might be liquidated, just like in virtual Web2 life or real life. Your bank would call you. It's not like you go on vacation and come back and, you know, it's not your house anymore. So yeah, that's one example. But, you know, you look at anything that's happening on Web3, you look at any dApp, and notifications basically just improves it a lot. If you look at governance, so if you have notifications, now you can put proposals to all your DAO members and people can vote on it. ENS domains, if you have ENS domains and your ENS domain is about to expire, now you have notifications going telling that, you know, your ENS domain is about to get expired. If you look at NFT, now basically, whenever an NFT collector launches a new collection, all of the previous buyers can be notified about it. If you look at Metaverse, when land is sold or bought, again, notifications basically improve your life a lot. So that was the idea behind notifications. And that was what we thought, that the base level of communication is notification, which needs to be built first. But after that, after you have built notification out, what's the next thing or the next problem that the Web3 faces in terms of communication? That is basically chat. So if you look at it right now, we are chatting on Discord, which basically means that we are not chatting to our usernames. Our Web3 wallet address is our username. So whenever we are chatting on Discord or on Twitter, we are just assuming that this username belongs or is connected to this wallet address. And it's very easy to spoof, like we have seen. But chat essentially solves that. So once you have chat along with notifications, now you can build WhatsApp for Web3, or you can build Discord for Web3, or you can build social media for Web3. So it's basically like communication is essentially a basic Lego building block of Web2. And that is what we thought Web3 needed. So that's why, you know, chat is needed. Besides, it will be very cool to chat to Vitalik if he accepts your request. Or more than that, like, you know, there was, there are a lot of problems in Solana, but one of the problems was, you know, a Solana whale couldn't be reached out. And with chat, you could have reached out. Or, you know, people could talk, even wallet addresses. And that's exactly what we wanted to enable. We wanted communication, whether it's in form of notification, chat, in the future, video, audio, or any sort of communication. We wanted to give that protocol level block to all the Web3 developers so they can basically build the YouTube of Web3 or the WhatsApp of Web3 or the Discord of Web3. So yeah, that's the vision behind why chat, why notification, and why communication.
Wow. The emotion that I'm getting here is that this is going to be a necessary Lego block for these money Legos. So whether we're talking about financial use cases or not, you need notifications. And what I love about what you've just said is that you did go beyond finance. Like a lot of people outside of crypto, when they hear crypto, they think we're just talking about finance. But as you mentioned, there's tools, there's chat applications, there's all these things we're doing day to day. There's the Google Calendar notification that got us on this call. We both received this. Yes. It made the magic happen. That's why we're here. And in those building blocks, I did have a quick question. You mentioned Solana along the way. Is this also going to be perhaps on Solana? What's the growth strategy there for EPNS? Because you're currently on Polygon, which is, you know, Ethereum.
We are on Polygon testnet right now. We still have to launch on Polygon mainnet. But yeah, the vision is to be the communication layer of Web3. We started with Ethereum because Ethereum community is awesome. Without Ethereum Foundation, we wouldn't be here. Without Gitcoin grants backed by Ethereum community, we wouldn't be here. So, and innovation simply happens on Ethereum. So we had to start with Ethereum. But yeah, the vision is that a service of Ethereum can interact with a user of Avalanche and can say, hey, you are also an Ethereum user, but right now you are on Avalanche crypto wallet, but something has occurred for you for Ethereum. Come have a look. Or even a user of Avalanche can talk to a user of Ethereum and vice versa. So the vision is that you be this de facto base protocol layer of communication for any sort of blockchain, whether it's Ethereum, whether it's Avalanche, whether it's Solana, whether it's L2s. I mean, you identify a user as someone who can be an Ethereum user, but at the same time can be an Avalanche user as well. So when you're sending these communications out, whether it's chat, whether it's notification, whether it's video in the future, you essentially are sending it out to a Web3 user. And no matter whether they are on, let's say, Phantom of Solana or any crypto wallet of Avalanche or any crypto wallet of Ethereum, they are able to see those data and they are able to see all those communications without going anywhere. So that's the vision we are working towards.
Not only cross EVM, it sounds like cross chain in every way. That's the goal you're building towards. You're building in public, you're on GitHub. I'm curious for you, what's it been like having mostly open source repos? What's it been like finding contributors and growing your team? Because finding more engineers is always difficult, but I've noticed you all are really able to attract talent. What's the secret there?
So yeah, I think Dawson, like building a team out, it's actually more than finding like great developers and of course, you know, having people in Web3 that believe in your vision and that believe in your value. They basically help, because once you start building a project which aligns to, you know, the values or the vision that you have, then, you know, because of the nature of open source, it automatically attracts good developers. So I think we have been lucky because we have some really cool friends, including you, that basically help us signal boost whenever we have a need in our team. And because, you know, good people signal boost, it basically attracts good team members. We do measure like two things when we are hiring someone in our team. Like apart from, you know, you being a good developer or a good marketer or a good community builder or a good BD, heads up, we're hiring for BD right now, by the way. So apart from that, we also want to see if you are a good culture fit. Culture fit is very hard to define, but I think one of our VCs gave us a very good example. It was True Ventures, by the way. They basically explained to us that let's say you hired a developer, or let's say you hired anyone who's really good at his game, but the problem is that he basically would not own up to the mistake, and he'll put it on his team member. And you basically go ahead with it because, you know, Web3, here 1 year is like 10 years, so you have to move fast, so you go ahead with it. So what happens is, like, you will survive for like the next few months, but after that, the culture of the team would become that no one would want to own up to the mistakes, or no one would want to challenge you because, you know, someone you hired who's a yes man. So everything you do is gold, which is not, you know, as a good developer, like, I love the team when they basically say, no, you are doing it wrong. That's like music to me, because then we get to brainstorm and then we get to build a world-class product out. So yeah, culture fit essentially is also very important to us. And the way we basically try to define it is by asking some personal questions in regards to whatever they have done professionally, and then essentially decide if the culture fit is also there or not. Because, you know, as I said, like, if you get a yes man, after some point of time, your project will not survive. If you get someone who doesn't own up to the mistakes or who puts it out to their team members, after some time, you won't have a team to work with. So that's why, you know, both of those things are very important to us. And I think we got it right. And that's why I think a lot of people, they come and, you know, they want to work with us to build this communication layer together. And yeah, that's just about it when it comes to building a good team. It's building a team where you are the dumbest person around. That's when you realize that you have built a good team. And other than that, you know, basically you can build a world-class product or a world-class ego, but never both. So we basically choose world-class product. So yeah.
And how big is your team now?
It's around 30.
Incredible. 30 full-timers?
Yes.
Wow. Congratulations on that growth.
Thanks. Thanks, Dawson.
Yeah, and you all started from a hackathon as well. Is that right?
Yes. So we started from Hackmoney 2020. That was just me and Richard, by the way. So just like you, I mean, we built the initial thing all by ourselves. So Richard was the marketing side of things, and I was just the tech side of things. And I know your viewers already know, but guys, like our backstory over here, like we met Dawson during Eid Denver. It was very cold and we went to a cafe. We ended up having 3 coffees. But more than that, you know, my jaw just dropped when, you know, Dawson mentioned that he built Unify all on his own. So the thing was that, you know, we were pushing him for a meeting and he wasn't able to meet up. So he was saying that he was not even telling us that he built Unify on his own. He was just nonchalantly saying that, guys, I don't have time to meet because, you know, I have to do everything. And that everything actually meant everything, because it was designing the website, creating the website, creating the backend, making sure all the airdrops are verified, sending it out to you. And, you know, imagine just a single guy doing that. So that was when my jaw dropped, and that was when I got this huge respect for Dawson. But yeah, that is very similar to how we started. At least I had Richard for the marketing side of things. I think Dawson didn't add that also. And it's a great learning curve. And I think it's also useful to know that, you know, when you're building like this, like when you're starting, you actually have to go for a very bulletproof architecture, because you're the only one doing a lot of things. So you need to know exactly what sort of processes are in place to build things out. Like you will only place this module over here. And, you know, if this is not enabled, then you first have to enable that out, because you cannot do ad hoc programming. So that was one thing that I learned. I also learned that, you know, once you build something on your own, it's very hard to let the control go. So when we started hiring and when we started giving the control to the team, it was very difficult for me to let go of that control, because I don't know why. It just is very, very hard. I think you are obsessed with what you are building. So that's why I think it's very, very hard. But the best decision at that point was giving the control to the team, because the only way to grow after you reach a certain level is to, you know, make that team. But yeah, hats off to all the full stack developers out there, guys. Like, you guys are amazing, including us.
Interesting. What I want to learn from you about, and also thank you for what you just said about when we got to meet, I also felt the same way about you two, in that you won a hackathon and grew it to now 30 people. So we see each other in a similar light, because to me, doing what you've done in that growth, it would be a massive, big change. You know, if I were to go down that path and you see what I've done as, wow, that would be a massive, difficult thing. But I think it was... someone said this once, whether you're the person down the street who owns a grocery store and works 60 hours a week, or you're Elon Musk and you work 60 hours a week, you're still working 60 hours. And so why not work on the most impactful thing? And up to this point for me, I thought that was probably to operate alone. For you, it's to grow the business and grow the employee count. Yeah, I love that analogy. You'll feel free to use it. It's a good one. And I don't know who it came from, so you can just say I made it up. And that's how I become legendary.
I love that analogy. And yeah, I'll say I heard it from Dawson.
Yeah, I'll just, yeah, exactly. That's how I become famous, is stealing other people's quotes. But Harsh, I did want to ask you about, how do you organize your workflow on a specific and maybe even technical level? We've mentioned GitHub now. How do you organize tasks both on a personal level and on a team level? So for myself, I'll go real quick. Selfishly mention, I do most things written down on a physical note card. There's tons of downsides with that, but that's the method that I seem to do for personal tasks. And then for shared or group tasks, I try to use GitHub, and I use GitHub issues, and then GitHub projects allow you to organize GitHub issues. But there's tons of downsides with that as well. So I'm curious for you, what have you found works well?
Got it. So I don't think I have a perfect formula for it because, you know, we keep on optimizing. For personal tasks, usually I thought I can do it all in my brain until, you know, I started forgetting everything. Then I shifted to a Google to-do doc. I started writing things out, but then I realized I usually forgot to keep a diary with me, or I'm out and I couldn't write something. So then it became clear to me that, you know, maybe for me, the best thing is to go to Google Docs. So I started just keeping a to-do list, and then it became evident that, you know, Google Docs are not usually the things to do that. Then I tried Slack with Remind Me. That feature works well if you are just trying to reply to someone, but doesn't work well with the to-do task. Then finally, I found my peace in Notion. So now I just try to handle all my personal tasks in Notion. The team task as well now is shifted to Notion and Jira to some extent, like basically give our team the liberty to carry it out. But yeah, most of the internal team task happens on Notion. Most of the things that we are working on the repo always happens on GitHub now. We started doing issues, we started exploring milestones, and that's the best way to go, in my opinion. I haven't tried projects yet because I think Jira kind of does that. But yeah, we'll also try to look into projects. I'm also looking into tagging, because, you know, you can release the package on GitHub, and we haven't tagged everything right now. But yeah, as I said, like, it keeps on optimizing. But I would say for me, the perfect solution is use Slack for chatting, use Notion for internal team activities and team tasks and your task as well, because then you can link everything out. And definitely use GitHub for any of the issues. It becomes so, so easier to just collaborate. I mean, I tried other tools. Like, people told me Jira might also be good. And I like, you know, some of my team members, they use Jira. So I like what they do. But now they have, we have connected Jira to GitHub as well. So for me, the entire dashboard is GitHub issues. And it also helps because, you know, once when I have time, I just go to GitHub and assign myself an issue and try to work around it. So that also becomes very, very ad hoc, becomes very important when the team becomes global. So I would suggest those three things. And Calendly, like use Calendly to basically offset these meeting times, even within the team. So now we have an internal Calendly page for all the team members. And let's say I want to talk to someone in an ad hoc fashion. I mean, with global, the problem is that, you know, I can say, hey, are you available to talk? And they might reply after 6 hours. And then I reply after 6 hours. So, you know, the meeting doesn't happen. So because of that, you know, Calendly just works well because I will just go and book some time and then we'll be there to talk things out and vice versa.
Have you and Richard tried to hire within local areas? So you're in Dubai. I believe Richard's in Dubai. Do you have other teammates there as well?
Yeah, so some of our team members, like, we have called them to Dubai because we are working on some of the secret features. And that's why we thought that, you know, those people who are responsible for those features, we should work together. Hiring locally, like, because we started during COVID, there was nothing like local. Everything was remote. So I think we just adopted that. So there's nothing like hiring locally now. We just try to hire from the global pool of talent. Most of the time it works. As I said, like, this is an optimizing process that we keep on doing as to eliminate, like, what are the problems with remote work. And most of the time, I think remote works better. So we haven't hired locally. Though we do call people from time to time when we are working together, or we think of an offsite where everyone can meet and work together, especially on, you know, cool features. So yeah,
and conferences as well. I know you and Richard go to so many. Do you want to share any of your conference schedule upcoming? Maybe we're going to some of the same events.
I think we all are going to DevCon.
Oh, yeah. In Bogota.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of us are going to be in DevCon, which is going to be a very fun conference. I wanted to be in ETLAB. I was speaking over there, but, you know, I got COVID, so couldn't really make it. Other than Bogota, this Messari, I'll be there because I'm invited over there as a speaker. And I'll also probably do a couple of alpha drops over there. But yeah, DevCon is where we have reserved all our alpha drops for now. And I think everyone has reserved everything for DevCon because we are so excited. It's happening after 3 years, I think. Last time DevCon happened, I think it was in Japan. And I wasn't able to go at that point of time. So this is going to be my first DevCon. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to meet all the old and new friends. So yeah, see you all in DevCon or at Messari.
I got worried just now. I haven't booked anything yet for Colombia. So I'm going to probably get the last hotel. I have to take a 3-hour train just to get a hotel.
Yeah, I would say book before releasing that podcast book. So, you know, at least you front end your viewers.
Yeah, if you see me looking over to the side as we talk, that's why. No, anyway, Harsh, before we wrap up, I do want to actually get into some details of EPNS, though. So I think the decentralized push notification idea is an incredible idea. Obviously, it was incredible to judges 2 years ago in the hackathon where you all were finalists, and it's still a useful idea. We still need this feature. But I'd love to understand, you know, from here, like, we can go as technical as you want. The audience can take it. I want to discuss how EPNS works. I understand it in some layer there's, you know, there's the mobile app, which you download. There's like a unique generated key that is stored somewhere. And then there's notifications being pushed somehow. How does that work? Is there IPFS? How are you doing all that process? I guess we can start wherever you want.
Awesome. So yeah, I can probably give a high level rundown and then we can go deeper. So when we started this, we realized that, you know, it needs to be multi-chain, right? So the way it works is, and it needs to basically support notification or chat, whether it comes from smart contract or dApp or backend or any protocol or almost anywhere. It just should be able to process everything. So the way we designed it was by creating two smart contracts. We essentially have like these three core components that enables the push notifications. The first is something that we call push core or EPNS core. It's a smart contract, whether you are a protocol, whether you are any service that wants to send notification out, you have to go and activate yourself an EPNS core. And this is used for governance. So basically, if you are spamming or if you are sending obscene things, people can remove you through on-chain governance or can deactivate your channel through on-chain governance. So this is EPNS core. It resides on Ethereum, but it also allows you to create channel, whether you want to create channel on Polygon or on Avalanche or on any other chain. It's just that if you do it multi-chain, you have to verify it on that chain as well. So this is EPNS core. Then we have the second core pillar, which is essentially the communication middleware. So communication middleware is made up of two pieces. The first is the gasless SDK, which essentially enables you to gaslessly send notifications out. And this SDK, what it does is, like, if you want to send a notification out, your JSON payload is signed by EIP-712 signature. And that's about it. The other way you can send notification out is through EPNS.com smart contract middleware. So if you're a smart contract, then of course you can interact with a smart contract and send a JSON payload or notification payload out. Now, all of these EPNS.com layers basically are getting listened to by push nodes, which are basically validator and indexer nodes. So the job of push nodes is to listen to any communication that is coming from EPNS.com layers, whether it's gasless SDK or whether it's a bunch of smart contracts deployed on all the blockchains that we support. And whenever a communication comes, the push nodes, they basically verify it through EPNS code, whether the notification is coming from a channel or not, and you know, some other validation checks. And if everything looks good, then the nodes, they basically admit it into the network. So this is how the sending notification part works. The sending chat works a little differently, wherein you don't need to even go to EPNS Core smart contract. Because you are a user, you can just gaslessly communicate by directly interacting with the push nodes, again with signing your chat payload with EIP-712. And it gets cooler because, you know, I'll come to that. So once you have these communications indexed in the push node, after that, because it's an open network, just like Ethereum, you can essentially, or any crypto wallet can now essentially tap into the network and can say, hey, show me all the communications coming for Dawson. And the network will just basically send that out. Now, some of these chats and some of these notifications will be encrypted, but because the crypto wallet is fetching this out, the crypto wallet will also be able to decrypt it out. So in essence, you know, the mobile app we created or the Chrome extension we created, they are just a proof of concept. And they basically allowed people to have the instant value add. But now we are going to go more towards the crypto wallets, because the idea is that the middleware should not require any other thing. The middleware or the communication, the pre-communication middleware just exists. And whatever wallet you are using, that wallet will start showing you all these things. Just like how, you know, the wallet shows you Ethereum account and, you know, what sort of balances you have in your account. So this is the basic level architecture of how notifications and chat payloads will work. Then comes the cool part, which is basically what we did was, and we are going to launch something like PIP so that the entire community can build this together. But what we did was we broke notification down into four pieces. The first piece is verification. So verification doesn't have to be EIP-712. If you feel there's another verification proof that you can provide, which can basically help us verify that this is the sender of the payload and this is the actual content of the payload and it came from this chain ID, then we will be able to program push notes for that. And once we program it, you know, those verification proof will be supported. So because of that, we got integrated with the graph. So if you have a subgraph, you can basically send notifications from there, because now the verification proof is whatever the subgraph content is, the push note can pull and verify it out. The EIP-712, I think most of the readers know that that is one of the way by which you can verify the chain ID, the content, and the sender. So that's another verification proof. If you are sending something from a smart contract, whether it's Ethereum, Polygon, or in the future any L2s, or even any other non-Ethereum blockchains, those transaction hash can be a verification proof. And the beauty is, anything can be a verification proof if, you know, you just submit a PIP saying that, oh, this is a verification proof that is new. And, you know, if it goes through the committee, they'll just adopt it out. Then after verification proof comes storage proof. So you said that whether we store it on IPFS or not, the thing is that we built it like to be storage independent, which basically means that the storage or the identity, which is what we call, basically defines where the payload is stored and how to interpret it out. So there's this minimal identity which we have, which is just sending a string of payloads together by just using the delimiter plus. Then there's IPFS, which carries the identity 1, which basically if you send it to pushnode, pushnode understand, okay, this is IPFS because the identity type is 1. So I will just pull IPFS and fetch this out. If the pay identity is 2, then the pushnodes understand, okay, this is a RESTful API call and the parameters itself are embedded in the identity. And if you are a storage level 3, push notes, they understand, okay, this is an identity that is coming from graph. So the beauty is it can be ever, it can be expanded, infinitely expanded. And all you have to do is, again, create a PIP and get it done. So this is identity storage. After that, we have payload. Payload basically defines what are the recipients of these notifications. And of course, the recipients, if they have opted in to receive the notification, then only it lands in their inbox. Otherwise, it goes to the spam box. But yeah, the payload also defines like what type of notification it is. So again, it becomes cool because in the future, if you have a video call, then you know that notification type can adapt to it. If you have encrypted transaction within the notification, it can adapt to it. In fact, using that logic, you can even adapt and send a yes, no along with the governance proposal. So you just type yes and everything is recorded directly. So it eliminates a lot of logic flows. And again, it's infinitely expandable. So you think that there's an audio payload that should be required. You can just submit a PIP, goes to community, and again, it's done. And the last composable block is content. Content basically defines like how the notification will appear and, you know, some of the formatting options. And you can, again, basically form an output or, you know, form a feedback that you want to improve this content out. And again, submit a PIP and get it done through. So it's just like EIP. I think we copied EIP 80-90%. And they are now PIPs because it's push improvement proposal. Yeah, that's the composability level which we have for notification. It's same for chat. And because of that, you know, chat becomes a lot cooler. It's not about, you know, sending a text message to you. It can be sending images. It can be sending even transactions or, you know, asking for payments. And there are some other cool secret features that we are working on. But yeah, that is also how chat is composable. So this is basically the lower level of push notes and, you know, what they do and how they do it. But in essence, combining all of it, you get this Web3 communication layer for Web3.
I love it. It's interesting to hear and to have seen the original hackathon submission and how large something can grow and become an entire network with, you know, three different parts of this grand scheme that all work together now. I'm sure it's way more decentralized as well than it used to be. And so it's cool that we're marching towards decentralization, especially with the recent news. Oh, it's been a wild few weeks. It's pretty scary. I mean, I don't know how you all are holding up, but in the US, a lot of us are worried as developers.
I don't really agree to what has happened. I think I tweeted it out as like, with that logic, you can basically arrest people who invented knives because knives are used for robberies, or you can arrest anyone. I mean, cars are invented and, you know, cars are also used in robberies, or cars are also responsible for accident. So where does that line stop? And also, I mean, open source and encryption is something everyone has worked on. So if we say that, you know, HTTPS was the reason why we are here, right? So where does that bug stop if at one point of time you suspend HTTPS? And also because, you know, I mean, the Web3 folks, they kind of saw through it. Like, it's so easy to send dusted ETH out, and that is causing a lot of problems for a lot of people. So, but it really just shouts that you need new set of laws to tackle this. You cannot just combine it with the old set of laws. Just like for AI or driverless cars, like we couldn't wrap our head with the driverless cars and the laws that we have for cars right now. So I do see the point, like I do see the point of US government and why they took that step. I just don't agree with it because I don't think that's a right point to take. A better point would be to make sure that, you know, you are putting in regulations that can stop bad people, but not go after developers that just contributed to open source. It just opens up a weird line of thinking and doesn't really protect the interest of a generalized user. Like, what about people who haven't heard about those sanctions and they are interacting with Tornado Cash? Do they become suspect? What about the STED people who received the STED transactions? I read on Reddit somewhere, but of course I did not trust Reddit, but they basically did a research wherein they said that you're just four hops away from a Tornado Cash. I mean, who decides like what people are suspects and what people are not? And more than that, do we really need to go after developers who build this thing out when everything was legal? It was not like US government said that don't build this out and someone built it out. People built it out, and then if you are changing the law, it needs to be from that point forward. It cannot come back. I think there's some nuances to it as well. Like, I do think what the government is doing is trying to protect money going elsewhere. But I think the action they took, that was a bit too much, or that basically became a bit too biased.
I agree. We'll see how it all plays out. I think we need more time to know. And to come to a close here, Harsh, I do have a quick question before we do social media and get all your follow-up info, which is, if you were to be speaking to someone who's a new developer, someone who's a Web2 developer looking to get into Web3, what piece of advice might you have?
I actually have three advice. First, join a hackathon. Like, hackathons helps you a lot because A, they are trained towards making sure that if you require a resource, you will get the best possible resource and the best possible industry guidelines. So you basically build very fast, but you built it right as well from the very start. The second thing is hackathons also allows you to not only get in touch with these mentors who are teaching you, but also from Web3 leaders. Like, for us, it was like, when we launched or when we spoke about the idea during the hackathon, Stanley was the one who replied to us that he might personally use it, which was in itself motivation alone to build the entire thing out. But then Mariano Conti was the one who judged us out. And later on, he became one of the angel investors to back EPNS. And more than that, a really, really good friend. So hackathons is the way to go. Cool idea plus hackathon always results in either a very cool product, but more than that, it always results in you increasing your knowledge. Second thing is be very shameless when it comes to asking questions. It was tough for me to be shameless at first. I thought people might consider me stupid. Turns out, like, good people and good community, they don't. They will explain to you why you're wrong, but they will not say that you're stupid. So go out, be shameless in asking questions. It doesn't matter what questions you are asking. Very recently, I asked someone, like, I know that private variables are stored on the blockchain, but I didn't know how to get them directly. So very recently, I asked that, and there's no harm in asking about it. And the third piece of advice is, like, go ahead and talk about your idea. A lot of times when we are starting, what we think is that, you know, the idea that we have, people might steal it or VCs might steal it. Well, that's not the case ever. I mean, ideas, people say ideas are worth millions, but it's the execution that are worth billions of dollars. So be very open in asking questions and be very open in talking about your idea. Web3 takes it up a notch because in Web3, you get called out if, you know, you steal someone's idea or you copy someone's idea. At least when you are in awesome communities like Ethereum, you'll get called out. So yeah, those are the three advices. And more than that, just have fun. You are building the future of the internet, the future of everything, the future of social media, the future of YouTube, the future of communication, the future of almost all the technologies that are here. So just have fun. Just do what you want to do. And yeah, let's build this future together.
Let's build it together. I think that's an excellent note to leave off on. As we do, Harsh, where can folks follow up with you? I know you have a Twitter. What's your Twitter username?
Sure. So you guys can follow me at Harsh Rajat, HARSHRAGAT at Twitter, or you can follow EPNS Project, EPNSPROJECT on Twitter, or you can just go to epns.io and follow the team section to find me.
Excellent. And I'll include all those links in the show notes. So thank you for your time today, Harsh.
Thank you for having me, Dawson. It was like one of the best interviews I had.
I appreciate that. It's flattering. Have a good one.
You too.